PTI try stop us, but they can't.
He's fragile. Very fragile.
There are Philly terms of phrases, like John is something that is said. It's a noun. It's a person, place, or thing. So this, for example, is a John. These papers are a John. This table is a John. This place is a John. I mean, it means anything. It's a noun. So literally everything is a John.
Wow. A John?
A John, yeah.
Spell it.
J-W-N, John.
Okay, John.
A John.
All right.
Yes.
Very good. We're learning lots of stuff.
So I would be able to say, that's a lovely John you're wearing.
You would.
Yeah.
Okay. And you could also say of me, you could say, who's that John in the John?
Oh. Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. Yep. What's going on?
Not a whole lot.
It's been forever since we podcasted. I'm like a little bit rusty.
I know. We kind of, there's factors conspire.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we are here now. Welcome. Those of you who are just joining us for the first time, welcome. And everybody else, extra welcome. But you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search for Interracial John. As Tessa Thompson just said, that's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John. Again, J-A-W-N. And we absolutely, L-O-V-E, just over the moon about feedback.
Yeah, we love feedback. You could do the feedback.
You can. You can leave it a couple of different ways. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And if it's 5 stars, we will read it here on the air. Mostly. You can email us also at interracialjohn@gmail.com. And you could also pick up your phone, dial 657 Johners. That's 657 JAWNERS. It's under 3 minutes and not ridiculous. We'll play it here on the air. Shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Hoe Tips for our general feedback rules. And I think we have some feedback and things.
You do? You want to do it now?
Yeah, let's go.
Ain't got shit.
Five stars.
This is from Cedric Etherly. Thank you, Cedric. He said, do it for the culture. Great show. It's funny, insightful, and you'll walk away having learned something new while having a good time doing so. Well, thank you, Cedric. We appreciate it.
High praise.
Of all, get some reviews in.
Yeah.
The hell.
We also have an email.
Oh, wait. I have a, where's my?
And what the are you saying to us?
Play it again.
And what the are you saying to us?
And I want to say
that's Walt from Black Ink.
And it was actually in response to, I want to say, was it what's the girl that got fired and rehired? I know there's more than one, but
I don't know, one of them.
Anyway.
Oh no, wait, it might have been Black Ink Chicago. Now I'm thinking about, because they had that one girl who was like obsessed.
Oh,
with,
it was
like,
Black Ink Chicago. It was Black Ink Chicago
with like and hygiene she or was, something.
She was spraying her fucking whole. She was saying that it was dirty and she was cleaning everything. And she had some weird comment about like you could get AIDS from a table or something, sort of like to that effect. And he's like, "The fuck are you saying to us?
What the fuck is you saying to us right now?" Okay,
yeah, shout out Black Ink Chicago.
Well, here we go. Hi, Leslie and Drew. I wanted to help end the feedback drought, so I decided to send y'all an email.
Woohoo!
As always, I love the show, and I'm always excited when a new episode is available in the feed. I was so sad to hear Leslie didn't enjoy Get Out, because it seemed to be this culmination of black joy and white tears that we really need in this era of Mango Mussolini and his neo-Nazi Oompa Loompas. I enjoyed the movie, and I enjoyed it even more because I saw it in a mostly white theater where my boyfriend and I were the only ones having a good time rooting for Chris to escape.
I can see that being a different experience. That.
Yeah, because the theater I saw it in, two black girls got into a fist fight. So
yeah, I remember you saying that.
In Savannah, Georgia. I was on the road. Once 45 was elected, I immediately deleted all news and political podcasts with white hosts. Working in an all-white space and living in a mostly white space, I'm just tired of white people in general. No offense, Drew. And I definitely don't want to listen to a bunch of white people trying to normalize our current environment. So, Leslie, thank you so much for Black Podcast Week. I love shouting out all the podcasts I love and learning about new Black podcasts. I even got to link a blog post I wrote for Black History Month about my favorite podcast with Black hosts. Okay, I think I've rambled on enough. Love ya, Katisha, member of the Faithful 14 and arch nemesis of Outstanding WC.
Thank you, Katisha. And was the No Offense Drew your or her?
No, no, she put that in there. No offense, Drew.
Thank you for that. For Black folk, people of color that are listening, you don't have to apologize to me personally. I as the very white guy, I'll take it on the chin for all of whiteness. You never have to put any declaratives. My wife doesn't, so you don't.
It's true.
She doesn't. She's like, fuck y'all white people. You suck.
Fucking white people.
She don't got to put, no offense, Drew. I get it.
We also got a message on our Facebook page I was going to read. That was an interesting question. Hello, Drew and Leslie. I have been curious about something you haven't discussed in a while. I was wondering if Joffrey is still messing with you.
Ooh, what the fuck are you doing talking about shit like that? Who is this? Oh my God. That's like driving down the road. Be like, well, traffic sure is good. Well, or like being at the beach. Like, it's not raining.
We'll
Man.
Just call this person AM because I don't know if they want us to know, let's say their whole name.
I'm teasing.
I was thinking maybe you decided to stop talking about it because it was so freaky or something. I know it is trivial regardless. You have so much more important things to discuss, of course. I just was reminded and curious after listening to your podcast, Science Versus, about ghosts and yesterday. Anyway, I love your podcast. Thanks for all that you do.
And no, I don't. I'm just teasing. You can talk and ask about Joffrey.
Definitely. No jinx. He's
saged,
still here.
Though. We saged.
So you say. We did sage. That dude ain't gone. He's still here. Just saying.
There hasn't been any more like phones off countertop. Like,
no, but the other night something happened and the door has been happening over and over again, Drew. You a damn lie.
Fuck me.
On this podcast right now, you a damn lie.
So we got a door. And everyone's got a door. That's stupid. Right. But our door has one of these like childlike, if your kid opened the door, it's got like a magnet and a little like, you know, other magnet in their side and it goes beep, beep, beep. And it's tied into an alarm system and shit. But so, you know, when you open the door, it goes beep, beep, beep. Let people know that somebody opened the door.
Right.
And
it's for like kids and shit.
That's it. It's like the childproof deal. But it just beeps, man. Like, the door won't open. It's fucking closed. Everyone's sitting on the couch. Both dogs there, like 12:30 at night. Beep, beep, beep. And that, I can't tell you how unsettling that is. Like, I really like, that just makes me very uncomfortable. And yeah. I have to go check it every fucking time.
It happens.
I check
constantly.
Every time. Is the door open?
Is the door open? Nope. Maybe the door open. Sometimes it does open, but most of the time lately it has not been open. It's just been like.
I mean, if I was going to rob a place, I'd do that. I'd put like a little remote controlled beeper in there. Mm-hmm. Like every fucking like hour, like beep, beep, beep. So in the middle of the night when it goes off, like, fuck that thing. It's probably nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Robbed.
Lies.
Robbed by Joffrey the ghost. He'd open the door. Ooh, come on in.
Come in. So what else is going on? What's up with you?
Well, did we do the where people can find us and stuff? I don't know if we did that.
I did. I said all of that at the top of the show. Where you been?
I don't know if I heard that.
I said all the things.
Are you sure?
I said about reviews. I thanked Rod and Karen. I did all of it.
Okay.
Y'all finished or y'all done?
Because I don't want to interrupt you with this shit.
You know what?
I don't want to interrupt you with this shit.
You know what?
I've been accused of interrupting somebody.
So I'm making a... I'm saying right now, I need to have access to also... play things because I'm not here for you just sitting over there sitting in the cut ready to throw some shit at me. I'm not here for any of that.
Finish or y'all done?
I was just saying, I just quoted that earlier today. It's funny.
Birdman is appropriate every time, all the time.
Always. Anyways.
Yeah.
That's Brian. If you're
Yeah. So I know you don't like talking about like audio shenanigans and stuff with the podcast. And I do like tweaking the sound and getting it better and better. And I think we're getting there. I like the production in my hands now.
Mm-hmm.
So it took about a half an hour going back and forth, kind of figuring out the volumes and stuff. And I just couldn't quite figure out what was wrong with your microphone. I was like, and I said this to you about one of the recordings you made for Safety Pin Box. I was like, man, just something doesn't sound quite right.
Mm-hmm.
And I know your microphone has a dent in it. So I thought, maybe it's the dent, this and that. I was really kind of checking it. And in looking, I hadn't noticed right away, but it became pretty apparent. Your shock mount, that's the little like rubber banded thing that the microphone sits in.
Yeah.
The rubber bands were all fucked up. Like six of them were off so that the shock mount necessarily wasn't floating like it was supposed to. And it was creating a almost like a metal on metal, like, I can't explain it, but it gave it a bottom reverberation.
Nobody cares about any of this.
But no, your sound is so much fucking better.
Well, I'll have to take your word for that. You wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I'm so excited.
That's not on the list.
I know, but it's exciting to me.
It's exciting if you say so.
It is. Well, so It says that now we can talk about the list stuff. I didn't know shit had to be locked gold, confirmed, like guaranteed fucking.
It'll stop with this locked
comprehension
gold.
Guaranteed bullshit. On the fucking podcast.
You're fired.
Notes.
You're so fired.
So I'm getting my hair cut.
Guys, I can't do this. I can't.
You can. It's Friday. Suck it up, Buttercup. You can do it.
I'm not gonna make it.
You need to
I'm
take
not.
A minute. You need a minute. You compose yourself.
Go on with your story.
So I'm getting my hairs cut, like last week or something, and I won't say her name, but she works at a salon, Pier Salon here in Grand Rapids, which is very nice. But our friend also gets her hair cut there, and I've run into her a couple of times at said salon, and we're talking, me and my stylist. And I'm lamenting the like ridiculous way in which this city gets up super, super early, right? Like just like super early, like 8 o'clock, they're fucking calling you. Like I don't care who they are, service appointments, dentist. In fact, I had to block like a large health program here, like the Mercy Health auto dialer, because it would fucking remind you of your appointments at like 8:05 a.m. Like I don't want you auto dialing me at 8 a.m. So I would block that shit.
Sorry, I was muted there.
You'd be muting yourself. So I was lamenting the fact that people call way too fucking early. Mm-hmm. And so of our mutual friend that also gets her hair cut at the salon, the stylist said she texted her at 5:30 in the morning.
To say what?
Can I get my hair done at like 11?
I'm just trying to understand how, what?
And her husband's like, who the fuck is texting? And she's like, her name. He's like, oh, all right. Like, I love her, but 5 a.m. And I know they get up that early. Mm-hmm. And our neighbors do. They start their car at like 6:45. They're out the door at like 7. I couldn't do it. But yeah, so Grand Rapids is up way too early. And as confirmation, my hairdresser said our best friend texted her at 5:30 for same day appointments.
Wow.
And speaking of text, I fucked up my contact list on my phone. I don't know what I did. I
actually didn't know that, but okay.
You didn't know I did that?
No, you didn't mention
Remember when
it.
I had the fuck up and I took
my
phone?
Oh, with your phone.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
they had
yeah.
To redo the
I
whole
didn't,
thing.
I thought you were over all that already.
Well, no. The guy said to me, like, did you save all this in the iCloud or something? And I was like, yeah, whatever. No big deal. And they like, put everything down and all of a sudden, like, the contact for you is like at excite.com.
From like 13,000
right.
Years ago.
It went way back. So I'm like adding shit again. And
where did it even pull that? I was really thinking like, that's barely
honestly,
digital times.
I don't know. It literally excite.
It's kind
was
of scary, actually.
A little bit. But so the other thing with me is that I've got a terrible memory, in particular for people's names, right? Like I just never remember people's names. So when I put in a person's contact into my phone, in particular if it's like a service that I'm using, I'll put the person's name and then the service that they provide, right? So like our current dog groomer is Pat Dog Groomer in my contact list because I ain't gonna fucking remember. I honestly don't remember the name of her grooming service, like World Class Mobile Grooming or Hall of Something Grooming. I don't know. Pat the Dog Groomer. So. Unbeknownst, I forgot that I got all these contacts from a billion years ago. So I just looked up dog groomer, like search dog groomer, see the first one, hit like send a message and had a pretty good like multi-day, like multi-exchange about when they could come and see us. And it kind of went back and forth and back and forth. And then they said something that was like, wait a minute, where are you coming from? Like they said something like, well, we're coming from Bristol. And I was like, Bristol? Like, Bristol,
like UK or
yeah,
Bristol?
That's my first thought was Bristol, UK.
Oh, okay.
No, dude, Bristol, New Jersey. They were the old dog groomer in New Jersey.
What?
And because our address is on Philadelphia, they're fucking got all confused because of the name of the streets and everything. And it was just an absolute trip.
Like, that was a mess. So you all, like, cause our, that is
yes,
funny.
Yes.
It's like confusing because we moved to Philadelphia
yes,
Avenue.
Yes, yes.
So they thought, oh, wait, maybe it's whatever.
It was a trip. So hilarious. After, and she was like, I can be there, but it's going to take about 2,300 miles. It's going to be this and that. And we all had a good laugh about it. But
funny.
So I was like, yeah, that's me. I fucked it up on text.
I fucked it up.
And here's something I don't know what to make of it. And I hadn't even bothered telling you because it was just sort of like bizarre.
Uh-huh.
Maybe like, a week and a half ago, I went to get McDonald's for us.
Yeah.
And I pull up and like, oh, your McDonald's is paid for. I'm like, huh? They're paid for. It's already been paid for. I said, what do you mean?
Wait,
said,
when was this? You didn't mention this.
I know.
Oh,
I know.
Why not?
I know. Because I can't believe I forgot about you. Here you go. So they said that it's already been paid.
Here I
said,
go.
I said, it's been paid. That's weird. I said, who paid it? I said, the car in front. I said, is everyone doing that? Like some kind of pay it forward thing? She's like, no, I don't think so. And I was like, huh, that's really strange. I said, all right, I guess I'll pay for the, how much? I said, how much is the order behind me? And they said the number and it was about the same amount, maybe in like $2 less than ours. I said, okay, I'll pay for theirs. Paid forward at McDonald's. If I'd had cash, I would have given it maybe to the cashier, but because I know they don't make enough.
Interesting.
Isn't that weird?
How much was it that they had been given?
Our bill was 15 and the car behind us was 12.
Interesting.
And I thought, why would, this is so strange. Somebody was paying it forward at McDonald's.
What an odd place to pay it forward.
Yeah.
Do they like, oh, I don't know. That's just weird. Of all the places. And McDonald's needs the money.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess people, that's definitely like where a lot of like, lower income folks have to eat because it's like the, yeah, especially in these food deserts.
I'm in a fancy ass car.
That's true, but they probably didn't know.
Well, and it is the McDonald's that's got the dual order and the single pay, so maybe they saw like the Black Lives sticker. I don't know. I mean, I doubt it, but it was weird. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. So speaking of like, not necessarily weird, but our dog, not the white woman dog, our other dog, the
asshole.
Yeah, she kind of hates us. And so I was really, for a while, like, fuck her. She's a pain in the ass. She doesn't even like us. She doesn't want to be down here. And a lot of it was wanting to look outside the window. And in particular, at this squirrel, right?
Mm.
The squirrel was just like the bane of her existence. So I thought, you know, why like call her an asshole and be mean? Let's just lean into it. Let's lean full into it. And, so I got her a bird feeder.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a special, like, you know, squirrels aren't supposed to be able to get to it bird feeder. And I hung it off the side of the house. But the squirrel can get to it, and the squirrel can get to it by hanging upside down off the screen and pulling the bird feed over with its front paws and eating out of it, and then hanging back down upside down a quarter inch from my dog's face eating these seeds. And the dog has lost her shit. I mean, am I crazy or has she not lost her shit? Like, she was an asshole before. She's gone now. It's all squirrel 24/7, nothing but. She either's staring out the window at the squirrel or she wants to run outside and try to beat it.
Mm.
Am I wrong?
Yeah, she does. She wants to eat it. I think there's no way that's not what she's trying to do.
Yeah.
She would kill it as soon as she got it.
Definitely.
Them squirrels is bold. They don't give a crap if I'm standing by the window. I banged on the window. They don't care. They're like, we getting these nuts.
Getting these nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when I was with Dr. Smooth Mustache?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you highlighting
when?
Yeah, why were you highlighting that?
I wasn't highlighting it.
You just highlighted
it. I was clicking over there.
Oh, I thought you were like,
I'll highlight this.
Is that better? Better. So I'm with Dr. Smooth Mustache. Let's see here. You were asking for an order from FedEx to be picked up, and it was going to close at a certain hour.
Right. Yeah. For a 60 pin box. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm watching the end of the Women's World Cup
curling. Yeah.
And for those that don't know, I fucking love curling.
Yeah, curling's dope.
I love it.
It's love it too.
Chess and bocce.
It's pretty awesome.
And I like the women's curling. And I can't lie, on both sides of the team, the women were all gorgeous. And that's, I don't say that's not always the case with curling, but they're all beautiful. So Todd's, of course, you know, being himself, right? being Dr. Smooth Mustache. So I was talking about like, man, you got like this thing for like curling girls, and he got all into trying to make like a curl swirl dating site for like people into curlers and shit. He was just cracking me up. But he's got a thing. He's now, neither him nor our other buddy knew anything about curling, so I told them all about it and how it's played, and they got into it.
Nice.
It was kind
of fun. I love curling. I really like low key. It's like the only thing I could think of, like a good reason of living like in a place that is cold, because maybe you could find a curling place. Because I'd love to do it. Sweeping the broom.
Yeah, it
looks
fun.
You get little booties.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool. Like the accoutrement.
Yeah. So this last piece I saw on Twitter was angry black lady, Imani Gandhi. She's also of Twib Nation, one of the co-host. I don't know.
Yeah. But
anyway, so she made a comment, I guess, and I don't know the exact beginning of where this went, but I gather the Rogue POTUS staff, which is a Twitter handle with quite a following now, a couple hundred thousand, made some comments about resistance being sort of like, you know, pointless or something. Like definitely like some not appropriate sort of language about resistance and fighting. And I guess Imani made a comment about the Twitter handle and, you know, this is some bullshit. If y'all think there's actually people inside the White House like you know, fighting from within. You're some suckers. You know, basically kind of like questioned Rogue POTUS staff in a very appropriate way, but just like, come on.
Like you know, let's be serious.
Come on. Yeah, exactly. Like, come on.
Ain't nobody in there trying to be Rogue. Like, they'd already shut this down a long time ago if it was real.
So Rogue POTUS staff went all fucking like, you know, the thing where somebody like, the lady doth protest too much, right?
Oh, I know that thing.
They went deep, like they started tagging her and like going all like blah blah blah. Now you're attacking me and this and that. And of course, everyone's like, of course, you're taking this a little bit too hard. And you know, of course, it was like, listen, I'm not saying it's like Steve Bannon behind this thing, but you know, if you all think it's Rogue POTUS staffs, you know, you're wrong. Hmm. I just thought it was great that you know, Imani took him down. She ain't here for the bullshit.
She ain't here for the bullshit.
And I gotta say, I saw some tweets from that account early on. I was like, oh, you know, sweet. Of course, I'm the first to be gullible like that. But, you know, and so it made a interesting, someone in that tweet thread, made a comment about Rogue POTUS staff being, a disintermediation of false information and deliberate, in particular in the, era of white trolling behind a black face.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you and I've talked about this privately, and I've actually had, and I wish I knew exactly which Twitter, I think Jax maybe was one, and there's a few other Twitter users, black women, of course, ding to that. In my earlier Twitter career, when I would fight with people like all the damn time on Twitter, like I would just troll back to folks, there was more than a few times where a black woman was like, listen, Drew, that ain't a black person. Stop. like I can see the way they're talking. They say they're black. They ain't black. That's a troll. Like, that's a troll in blackface kind of thing. And so I guess that's becoming more and more common. So a prominent Twitter personality comes with a fair share of trolls. Trolls, as the internet describes them, are users who bait others for their own amusement. So whenever Van Newkirk, writer at Atlantic with a large following, gets a provocative clap back on his tweets about race, he typically ignores it. But he began to pay attention when an account bearing the image of a black woman mentioned she would be okay with her son being subject to police brutality if he misbehaved. And another account with a picture of a black person said Emmett Till deserved to die. This is Van Newkirk said, I'm used to trolling. It doesn't bother me, but the idea of a black woman selling her sons to police with everything we know now was so sad to me that I couldn't wrap my mind around it. And the idea that anyone, let alone a black person, could say Emmett Till deserved to die is just so beyond the pale. Over the past few months, black Twitter has noticed an increase in the number of white trolls creating fake Twitter accounts.
Yeah, you know who's always putting me hip to that is Feminista. I'll be arguing with somebody and she'd be like, girl, that ain't a black person.
That's what I'm talking about. It's always the black woman that's like, that'll give me, especially me. But yeah, so I didn't realize, and there's even like on these fucking 4chan sites and stuff, there's a how to on like the Daily Stormer, which is a white supremacist site, how to be a epithet on Twitter. So it's literally got methods of creating accounts and I've gotten better at spotting them, like the number of followers and the number of tweets and stuff. But I just thought it interesting that the Rogue POTUS staff got kind of outed by Imani and then in concert, the sort of trolling in blackface, I guess.
Not a surprise at all. People are trash.
Yeah.
Trash, trash, trash. So I didn't have much to talk about. You had this squatty potty thing, so I guess
we can skip it. I think it's funny because we own a squatty potty.
I love my squatty potty. Y'all should all get one. It will help your life.
Yeah, it's good for pooping. But this commercial they have is one of those like...
This is where your ice cream comes from. Oh. The creamy poop of a mystic unicorn. Totally clean, totally cool, and soft serve straight from a sphincter. They're good at pooping. But you know who sucks at pooping? You do. That's because when you sit on a porcelain throne, this muscle puts a kink in the hose and stops the Ben and Jerry's from sliding out smoothly. Is that a problem? I don't know. Are hemorrhoids a problem? Because sitting at this angle can cause hemorrhoids, bloating, constipation, and a buttload of other crap. And seriously, unicorn hemorrhoids? The glitter gets everywhere. But what happens when you go from a sit to a squat? Voila! This muscle relaxes and that kink goes away faster than Pegasus laying sweet sherbet dookie.
Jesus.
Now your colon's open and ready for battle. That's because our bodies were made to poop in a squat, and now there's a product that lets you squat in your own home. Introducing the Squatty Potty. No, Squatty Potty is not a joke. And yes, it will give you the best poop of your life, guaranteed. I don't just mean you bloated lords and hemorrhoidal ladies. I mean everyone.
Mm-mm.
It's a lot. Squatty potty.
It's way too much.
But I swear by it. I really do. Makes it.
Oh, just like squatty potty itself? Oh, yeah, for sure. Squatty potties.
There's something about the squatting that
Z-truth.
Is vastly superior.
It is vastly superior. Vastly. fascinating.
You want to tell the peoples about where you're gonna, where we're
gonna
be?
Yeah, we are gonna be. We're gonna be.
Oh my god, we're gonna be. I'm sorry. Can I just geek out for a second? I get to go with you somewhere.
You are going with me somewhere.
I like never get to go with you places. I would say never, but seldom.
It's
rarely.
A rarity. It's
rarity.
Not,
yay! I'm so excited.
You're so cute. I love it. Anyways, yes, we are going to be in Boston. I am going to be doing a third round of the Organizing on Safety Pins and Needles workshop series with the Didi Delgado from BLM Cambridge. And we're going to be actually at the UA headquarters, which is going to be quite interesting.
Yeah, that's going to be, I didn't even think about that. That's going to be fucking tense, maybe, yeah?
We'll see.
A little terse?
A little bit.
Hey, has anybody seen Peter?
Okay, good night. So you guys can, I've been posting everywhere, you can check it out wherever, just look for hashtag OSPAN, OSPAN, to check out details about if you're in the Boston area. And if you're not, next week we'll be providing folks a link that you can actually just for $10 watch the live stream of the workshop. It's hands-on, kind of interactive for white folks looking to be more effective allies. We really talk about some tangible things that folks can do. Anyways,
should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
The news is coming on.
So, you know, we've been talking. You turned that off, right? I just want to make sure you stopped it.
I did. Cool. Although I don't mind when she starts talking in 20 minutes.
I know, it is cute. I love her. I miss her. Anyways, I saw this article. I thought it was really cool. It's from Business Insider. It says a new kind of doctor's office charges a monthly fee and doesn't take insurance, and it could be the future of medicine. And I was like, that sounds like subscription service medicine.
It kind of does.
Medical care. So I thought it was interesting. So, this doctor came up with it, and he talked about he learned a totally different way to run a doctor's office. It's called direct primary care, and it works like this. Instead of accepting insurance for routine visits and drugs, these practices charge a monthly membership fee that covers most of what the average patient needs, including visits and drugs, at much lower prices. It sounded good to him, so he opened his direct primary care pediatrics practice, Gold Standard Pediatrics in South Carolina. And he's part of a small but fast-growing movement of pediatrics, specifically family medicine physicians and internists who are opting for this different model. It's happening at a time when high deductible health plans are on the rise. A survey in September found that 51% of workers had a plan that required them to pay up to $1,000 out of pocket for healthcare until insurance picks up most of the rest. This means consumers have a clearer picture of how they've been spending their healthcare and are having to pay more. So they kind of like were a little more like aware of the cost of healthcare.
Sure. It keeps getting passed on to the consumer.
Getting in on that. And so, I just thought it was interesting. I'm for anything that kind of disrupts this whole thing. And so for an example, so Brett Long and his family paying for healthcare, is now like paying a cell phone bill since they joined, a healthcare in Tennessee, a similar one. And they paid about $150 a month to belong to the practice, and they joined around the time he was shifting his insurance to a high deductible healthcare plan. And there were two reasons he decided to switch and start paying for all six members of his family to get direct primary costs: the cost effectiveness of not having to deal with copays or urgent care visits, or the fact that it could easily fit his family's busy lifestyle that doesn't jive with spending hours in waiting rooms, including in that monthly fee or basic checkups, same day or next day appointments, and a big boon to patients, the ability to obtain medications and lab tests at near wholesale prices. So they have some examples of kind of like how it works. Mm. Direct primary care versus traditional doctor visits. So how many of them are there? There's only about 1,000 of them right now in the United States. They have about 500 to 1,000 patients per doctor in each of the practices. It's usually, there's no cost for the visits, but it's about $50 a month for membership. That's the average. You have about a 30 to 60 minute average visit, so you get to spend more time with your doctor, because this is like some people are buying into, right, to the care.
Yep.
And compared to 13 to 16 minutes with a family practice. How do the doctors get paid? So the doctors are paid with the monthly membership fees.
Makes sense.
Totally does. You can't use insurance. You get a wholesale blood test, and you get wholesale plus 10% only for prescription drugs.
I mean, listen, the health insurance, I'm very fortunate. My company, every time it gets more expensive, they absorb it for me. Not for my family, but for me.
Mm-hmm.
And me personally, like the insurance, like I know what it pays. Like I have access to stuff, that what it costs and shit. It's like $900 and something a month. that my company pays for just my insurance.
And I can see it's all these like tech companies that are like Jeff Bezos backed one of these in Washington State.
Think of it for his employees alone.
Yeah, but I'm saying that but look, it's about people that already have opportunity hoarding further opportunity.
Yeah.
None of these people need this service. It's just more convenient for them. It's not they couldn't afford the other high costs, right? That's not who this is catering to.
I feel like it seems like the insurance business has got, I don't know if we talked on this podcast, but here in Grand Rapids, they've integrated every damn thing and it's all owned by one or two conglomerates, Butterworth or Mercy's Health. And to the point that like they all know everything at every place and it feels like a system they've created so as to be able to go through the insurance rigmarole as smoothly and efficiently as possible. There is no question, is this the right procedure? Because this doctor gave you a referral to a specialist who gave you a referral to this. You know what I mean? It's all like tied in neat and nicely.
Right.
This other direct care seems like the alternate response. Like, you know what? Dealing with insurance is a friggin' hassle. I don't want to do it. So St. Mercy's made this big friggin' integrated $1 billion whatever to deal with it. And this person went month to month direct care. But it is a bit of a privilege. You're right. It doesn't seem like it's for poor people.
It's not. And that's who would, like, I'm just being real. Like, that's who would need it. And also, who really, like, I could see the average poor person, if it really was $50 per person, like, that would be something they could afford or make work in their budget.
Yeah.
$50 a month.
So I
and with all of this talk about how healthcare is so unaffordable and the government can't afford to pay for people's healthcare, et cetera, yet lo and behold, ain't nobody thinking about that, this option.
Yeah. You know, the friend of ours that's still in the reserve service.
Yes.
They are doing a deployment coming up. I don't know when or if I can say everything, but it basically is setting up like it's replicating field emergency type, like world catastrophic disaster things, right? Okay. Like, okay, how is the military going to respond to a catastrophic disaster? We need to be like prepared, have like preparedness training.
Right.
And they're literally doing the preparedness training by setting up like rural, like free health stuff in like, you know, Appalachia and like, you know what I mean? But like the comment that I had with our friend in this is like, yeah, man, you're preparing for catastrophic world disasters by treating people in our own country.
Mm.
You're not going to like quote unquote proverbial or whatever third world countries to set up this thing. Like there's that need, the healthcare need is that great here in our own damn country.
Right.
You know, it's kind of messed up, but neat that they're practicing and actually going to be giving care to patients. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, so I saw this. I've been seeing it more and more. Google's actually had to talk quite a bit about it. And I think it's probably a 45's election response. But so big brand advertisers are pulling out of Google, in particular YouTube, because their ads are appearing near extremist content. Right.
Oh.
So right-wing
you'd go to
Nazi.
A page and it would be.
So the way everything works is algorithmically and it's based on traffic. So the thing that's most interesting, the thing that's always been interesting to the brand, AT&T and Verizon and all these folks, is who's watching, right? What's your IP address? Is it in the United States? Kind of like demographically, who are you, right? Are you a consumer in the US? You're going to get a video ad from a high-end Procter & Gamble type package good thing, right? So the ads are based on who I'm watching it, not the content I'm watching it next to, right?
Right, right.
So like YouTube and all these publishers, they don't say show this ad specifically. They put a snippet of code that says show whichever advertiser pays the highest price for this ad at this moment that this page is being viewed by this person in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It's all pretty complex how it's done. And there's like this sort of bidding train and waterfalling of stuff. But so these big brands don't really have a lot of control. They just say, I'm going to spend money with YouTube and here's what I want. But now they're flexing it. Now they're saying, hey, you know what? There's people that are complaining that they saw our ad next to extremist content or our ad rolled before
that
KKK
right.
fucking
right.
like recruitment ads. And these brands got a right to be kind of pissed about it. And so the solution, I don't want to say like always, but right now it's really going to be giving those brands the opportunity to opt out and YouTube and Google and brands spending a fucking ton of time tagging shit and making sure that that's now I guess the point being, as a publisher, I'm in this industry, I have categories and categories did not include alt-right until now. I can filter out gambling. I can filter out diet, extreme weight loss,
but not race.
Multi-level marketing schemes, but not KKK. There wasn't a category. It's going to have to be now.
Interesting. That's very interesting, I think, because I feel like, I don't know. I just think it's an interesting, like, how are they going to navigate that, like, on the tech side of it, is what I was
thinking.
They're
going to have to. I
mean, the codes, but how?
No, it's not code. It's going to be like they've done, I would say, most often the, I don't want to use the word regulation, but the vetting of content in this way.
Yeah.
It comes down to a human. It comes down to a person.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying, like, I don't know.
They're going to have a human now.
Watch everyone or only when something's flagged? That's what I'm trying to understand.
I don't know how categories are. So when it's me as a publisher, this is interesting. You're right. So as me as a publisher, the categories I can neglect and deny are based on an actual advertisement that a human has reviewed every single one. If I'm going to put an ad on Google, I'm going to pay Google $10 to display this ad. It can't be like a nude chick. They're going to look at it and say, that's not allowed. Like, a person has to approve every single ad that gets on there, and they tag it. This ad is diet and weight loss. This ad is multi-level marketing. This ad is church. This ad is whatever. They don't do that on the publishing side. Anybody can put a fucking snippet of code and show ads.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know how they're going
to
do it.
I don't know how, like, that's what I was trying to say, like, how the tech would work.
And it's
on the
and you're right. On the back end, it's always been reactionary.
It's been reactionary. And also, I don't know how, because sometimes because there's voluntary tagging, right? Which is one thing. No one's going to voluntarily tag their shit racist, though. So it becomes useless. Like, you tag it like kid friendly or mature or whatever the fuck. But that's completely, this is something else.
Listen, Johnson & Johnson and Enterprise have stopped all YouTube advertising.
They should.
But that's not a small amount of money. Google's going to have to fucking do something. So Google apologized. Advertisers might be affected by their ads appearing on controversial content. Followed up by announcing
plans. Even that irritates me, because it's not controversial. It's racist. Like,
listen to this. Here's the plan. Google followed up by announcing plans to boost resources for reviewing content and to make it easier for brands to control where their ads appear. Not removing that content. Interesting.
See what I'm saying? It's like, it's such trash. That's why I'm interested in the back end of it, because that's what will tell me how serious they're taking it. Like, really, like, what they do there is what's going to be the thing that folks should be paying attention to.
Yeah, so the UK,
the rest of this shit is lip service.
No, the UK is doing a bunch. An investigation published last week.
But the UK is totally different,
London.
Though.
I know, listen, but the world follows sometimes. By the Times in London revealed that ads from brands like BBC and L'Oreal were placed near inappropriate content on YouTube by religious extremists and KKK leaders and more. And then it said, overall, we think that the problem which has come to light will have global repercussions as UK marketers potentially adapt their policies to other markets and as marketers around the world become more aware of the problem. Brian Weiser, an analyst for Pivotal Research, wrote, they're going to have to do something. They can't, you know, it's interesting that these extreme views were okay until someone with money said, no, this is not okay. And the views still aren't going to be banned or filtered. They're just not going to have ads next to them.
Right.
Google just won't monetize that content.
Right.
The platform's still free. They can still disseminate this kind of fucking horseshit. You know, there's no real change. We just won't. Okay, we won't make money on that.
Right.
Thanks, Google. I guess.
It's trash. Long story short.
Super trash. So there's a new, Airbnb policy. And I don't know.
What is it?
So you and I are big Airbnb fans. We Airbnb a lot. I got like one Airbnb. Of the little, you've got an Airbnb coming up, Boston, which you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Please accept your invitation and I'll just read it. And this is mandatory. And they knew it was me. I was already logged in. Before you continue, whether it's your first time using Airbnb or you're one of our original travelers, please commit to respecting and including everyone in the Airbnb community. Learn more, which I'll read in a moment. And then the thing I had to accept or decline, I don't know what happens if you decline. I agree to treat everyone in the Airbnb community, regardless of their race, religion, national origin, ethnicity, disability, sex, gender, identity, sexual orientation, or age, with respect and without judgment or bias. And then the little terms about the community commitment. So there's some FAQ. Why did Airbnb create this commitment? This commitment is an important step towards creating a global community where everyone can truly belong. Discrimination prevents hosts, guests, and their families from feeling included and welcomed, and we have no tolerance for it. Building an Airbnb where everyone can belong hinges on knowing that everyone in our community understands this mission and agrees to help us achieve it.
Mm-hmm.
What if I decline the commitment? If you decline the commitment, you won't be able to host or book using Airbnb, and you have the option to cancel your account. Once your account is canceled, future booking trips will be canceled.
Right.
You will still be able to browse Airbnb, but you won't be able to book any reservations or host any guests. Mm. How can I share feedback about commitment or get more information? We welcome your feedback at allbelong@airbnb.com. You can also review our host resources, which cover frequently asked questions by hosts about Airbnb's non-discrimination policy. So I wanted to put that out here just – I don't know if it's news per se, but I thought it was different and new to me for Airbnb, and I know that they've had a problem, and we've talked about on this show about a black Airbnb black or Airbnb noir, I think it was called, as a competitor, and whether or not that was actually a viable, you know, solution to this issue. But so
I think it was Noir Airbnb. I actually know somebody who's one of the like founders of that. They haven't launched yet, but they're going to be.
Okay. So, I guess one, you know, my first thought is like, okay, it's something. And then my second thought is, but what is it? There's no real teeth behind it. You just clicked on something saying you agree to do this. And if you don't, you can't be a part of it. And I guess it gives them a repercussion if they find, you know, like someone's breaking this policy. Someone's not renting to black folk or they're having some discrimination. They now have like, well, you agreed you would do this. You're out and you're banned for good kind of thing.
Oh.
So I think it's a good policy. I agree with it. What do you think? It's like I agree with it, but I also see that it's not really anything. It's a piece of paper. You know what I mean?
Right. It is just a piece of paper. I think that they're like,
And let's be honest. It's a reaction. It's a reaction.
It's a reaction. And I think they're just trying to do whatever they can and, you know, keep their business model intact. I just say as a business owner, you don't have many other choices but to try to do whatever.
Especially after their.
Yeah.
The problem was too widespread.
I feel like it's not something that you can. It's interesting. They started doing a lot of things. Like now I have to say exactly who's going to be in the place. That didn't used to be the case before.
And what do you mean if someone's in there along with you?
Yeah. So and also if I'm booking for somebody else, like it makes you like.
So if Leslie Mack is booking and Leslie Mack isn't staying, you have to say who it is that's staying.
Yeah. And they have like a business function now that they added.
And what do you think that having someone stay? How do you think that helps so that somebody can't be fake?
Yeah, I guess it's supposed to be like safer or whatever. I don't know.
For the
person.
Renting
to
that sounds
who you're renting to, I think.
It's almost
who
like
you're renting from, I think.
That almost sounds like I don't want somebody white renting and somebody black showing up at my house.
Well, you know.
Like that almost seems like in order to do this policy they had to give something.
That's what I was that's what I was trying to say. Yeah. But
states'
know.
Rights. It's not about slavery.
It's not about
states'
slavery.
Rights. States' Ooh. Rights, y'all. States' rights. that sucks that they did that on the other side. Interesting. I hadn't seen your perspective. You have to say who's staying.
Yeah, so that's it's only because I book a lot of Airbnbs for other people, like through Blue and for Safety Pinbox and all sorts of teams, actually, of people. And so I have these. And you actually, like, for Blue in particular, because we really do, we travel a bunch as a group and frequently have to stay Airbnbs together when we go to, like, retreats and things. And they totally make those people not only when you set up, like, as a business – you only people with the like at blacklivesuu.com email addresses can be part of the team. Like they really like narrow it. So it's like, oh, y'all are a business. You all need to be in the business. So it's very interesting.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on to, I think lighter, I would say lighter, better things. And that's a good thing. It's changing, but like everything, it's not like reform isn't like obviously
immediate.
Not just like, you know, it's not exactly what you want. It wasn't perfect. But so this next thing is a story that I saw on NPR and I didn't get to catch the full story. But it was about a young man named Sydney, a young black child, who really wasn't finding any, as we've talked about, not a surprise here, books with African-American children, black children, and was a little bit discouraged and ended up getting connected with a local bookstore called I See Me, and it's EYE, sort of like your eye, See Me, educational products that promote positive African-American images.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's I got a bookstore and all kinds of books and different things. Again, all, you know, children of color and primarily black children. So Sydney, taking a step further, formed his own book club, Books and Bros.
Sydney.
Books and Bros focuses on the bond of boys who are interested in reading African-American literature that encourages entrepreneurship, financial literacy, technology, and more. Sydney started his own book club, which he titled Books and Bros, to make reading fun for boys, particularly between the ages of 8 and 12, but we welcome within any reading level of the 4th to 6th grade. Boys, especially African-American boys, statistically stop reading within this group, and we wanted to combat that stereotype and encourage literacy within the young African-American community. Sydney loves reading all genres of books, like Grumpy Cat to Diary of a Wimpy Kid, to books like the featured Danny Dollar Millionaire Extraordinaire, Lemonade Escapade. I've never heard that. Danny Dollar Millionaire Extraordinaire, Lemonade Escapade. We held his first meetup with his new reading friends Saturday, September 10th, 2016 at the African American Children's Bookstore, I See Me. The owners agreed to open their space monthly to allow Sydney to encourage reading in the community. At the first meetup, Sydney had a successful turnout, fun music, and even had the idea to host his own lemonade stand in light of the plot of the featured book. During this event, not only did he make new friends, but he learned skills of leadership, public speaking, and entrepreneurship. After finishing the first book, we hope that all of the readers learned the previous mentioned as well as financial literacy. His next meetup will be at Microsoft St. Louis Galleria Mall Sunday, April 2nd. So we got just a couple days, I think, here from 4 to 6 p.m. Join us, members and parents only. Shout out to Sydney. I thought that was just a great story. I love that there's a store that's opening their space and they're doing this for the community.
It's interesting for sure. Well, you know, St. Louis is where Books and Breakfast was born.
Okay.
It's interesting seeing this Books End thing. I don't know. I got to think on this. I mean, I think it's great and all, but
what's your
it's
issue?
Interesting.
You think that it's appropriating the original one?
Appropriation might be an inappropriate nature of it, but I'll say this, that Books and Breakfast is free and it's in a park and provides food for low-income children, and a Microsoft store is not accessible for those people.
Fair.
So, anyways, you know, teach his own.
Yeah, I guess, you know, everything comes with a lens, right? A different
yeah, you know, for me, though, it's always about going to think about the most marginalized. I think it's dope. Trust me. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes privilege looks different, you know, in the eye of the beholder. And so I'm thinking about often when stories like this pop up about accessibility. And, you know, it goes back to the story we were talking about earlier, actually, about the healthcare thing. So it just strikes me as similar. But I think it's a great program and it sounds super dope. And I am very glad that Microsoft is opening its doors for such things to take place, and it looks really fun, and I love boys reading, so everybody should read.
Yeah, and I like that he's combating the, you know, he got a stereotype, but I don't know if it's a stereotype that, you know, reading, and I just think it's I didn't have the same take, but I never do as you.
Well, you know, it's a problem. Like, once you become an organizer, there's this like weird thing that happens that you just it's always evaluative of situations. It's not good sometimes, but it's interesting anyways.
Yeah, we'll get on that later when we talk about how you ruined UConn's March of Madness.
Sorry. Anyways, Fearless Girl statue will stay through early next year. The Fearless Girl statue will stare down the Wall Street Bull for another year. The popular statue will remain in Lower Manhattan at least through February 2018. Fearless Girl was installed across from the iconic Charging Bull sculpture last month by State Street Global Advisors to advocate for getting more women on corporate boards. After an extension of the initial permit, she has been scheduled to stay until April 2nd. She will stay in place, hands on hip, as part of a city public art program. In her short time here, the Fearless Girl has fueled powerful conversations about women in leadership and inspired so many. Mayor Bill de Blasio said in a statement, "Now she'll be asserting herself and affirming her strength even after her temporary permit expires, a fitting path for a girl who refuses to quit." End quote. Since she appeared, more than 2,800 people have signed a petition to keep her there. Neera Desai, who started the petition, calls the extension really incredible news in an email to CNN Money. She says she also plans to make Fearless Girl permanent. The sculptor, Kristen Bisbal, told reporters that the response kind of renewed my faith in sculpture and art to make an impact on society. And Fearless Girl has shed a light on the issue of the need for gender diversity more than anything before her has.
So now you're talking about you done reading?
No, I'm just... I'm just digesting. I'm just digesting that statement by the sculptor.
Yeah, it's a pretty broad declaration of
Let me read it again. Fearless Girl has shed a light on the issue of the need for gender diversity more than anything before her has.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Anyways.
I'm the best. I'm the top. I'm the number one. So you were talking about the different framing. And I put this in there specifically because I immediately thought, well, she's white. The statue is. And I don't know if that makes a huge difference, but certainly the willingness and the signatures and let's keep her there. And, you know, it's gender diversity, but it's certainly not racial.
Well, it's funny. I was reading, shout out to Feminista Jones. She always puts these awesome threads together that make me really think. And she was talking the other day about this concept of work and how value is always tied to work in our society. And Fearless Girl plays into that a lot, that the capitalistic nature of, you know, not that we need to fight the bull, but that we need to be able to ride the bull, right? Like, there's two different approaches to fighting in that environment. And the one that the message that's being sent is like, we need to be equal. And it's like, or we need to tear that shit down. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a different commentary and a different lens with which, as you mentioned earlier, to view a lot of that anti-capitalist. It's not actually anti-capitalistic. And I think that's the point I would make, is that it's not. And so that gives me just like, okay, what's its value truly in being a radical statement? Your radical statement is that women should make more money. Like, gender equality, great. Haha. What does that really mean when we dig deep into what it should mean? So that's what I would say. Anyway, good for her. She's staying.
Yeah.
Get Joe's girl.
All right.
Whatever. The other thing I wanted to bring up was this report that just came out from the Baltimore Sun about bridging the divide. Within integrated schools, de facto segregation persists. Really talks about the fact that what happens in Columbia's Hammond High School, this is in the Baltimore area, it's called one of the most diverse school districts in the entire country. Literally, black and white students are more likely to sit next to each other in Howard than almost anywhere else in the entire state of Maryland. But within the diversity, school leaders have uncovered a de facto system of segregation. Enrollment data obtained by the Baltimore Sun through records requests show that the district's advanced classes, honors, gifted, and talented, and AP, are disproportionately white, while the regular and remedial classes are disproportionately black. The story actually starts with two friends who were in school together all through all of their school. They've been friends since they met just before ninth grade. They've been through a lot together. They battled depression. They failed classes. They encouraged others to do better. And in 10th grade English, they were hoping for a prize recommendation to the AP English class. Eli had doubts, Eli's the white kid, about whether AP English was for him. His attendance had been poor. He had just barely passed some of his assignments, but for the teacher, he said it was never a question. You can do this, he recalled her saying. This is what you should do. Mickey also asked his teacher about AP English. Despite failing several assignments, he believed he could thrive in a more competitive environment. Her response, as he remembered it, do you really want to do that to yourself?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. The following fall, Eli, who's white, enrolled in AP English. I was always kind of told I belong, and Mickey, who's black, enrolled in regular English. That's where the black kids are, end quote, by Mickey. So it just talks about the, you know, even this is why just focusing on bare numbers is not how we get to equality in education at all, because this tracking happens and it's gross.
Yeah, I think when I did the Black Reality Month for February, there was a stat about how many people what percentage demographically have access to AP classes, and it's obscenely disproportionate. Like, literally, like 75 to 80% of predominantly white high school students, I should say like 80-some-odd percent of white high school students have access to AP classes, less than like 50% of black high school students do. Like, my high school, you know, I'm not putting it like, you know, ooh, this, that, but it at the time was one of the top high schools, public high schools in the nation. It's still one of the top in terms of per capita spending per student. We had so many fucking AP classes. It was insane. I'm talking like AP, like at least three or four languages, AP French, AP Spanish, AP fucking Latin. Like, you could take AP Latin. Who fucking takes AP Latin in high school?
Right. They had AP Latin, I'm aware. Just saying.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Put the game clock at 4:20.
Smoke weed every day.
So this is new to me. I hadn't seen this, but I'm not surprised. I'm here for it. The FBI says it can't find hackers to hire because they all smoke pot. I have to hire a great workforce to compete with these cyber criminals, and some of these kids want to smoke weed on the way into the interview. After being chastised for his comments about marijuana by Senator Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions chastised? After being chastised for his comments about marijuana. Oh, so Jeff Sessions is chastising? FBI Director
He's
Comey.
He's the head of the FBI. I know. What do you think they were going to be talking about?
Just like Jeff Sessions is chastising somebody. He's like, beady-eyed fucking bastard. Told those in attendance at a Senate hearing, the Bureau's oversight, that he was just kidding. Absolutely dead set against using marijuana. He said at the hearing, I don't want young people to use marijuana. It's against the law. We have a 3-year ban on marijuana. I did not say I'm going to change that ban. I said I have a grapple with the change in my workforce. So if you've been caught smoking weed, or you do smoke weed, or you have a positive weed test, you can't work for them for 3 years. You might have to change that. A lot of workforce places are making changes to their, in particular, THC policy.
Yeah. Some of them are making changes to their residential requirements, too.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Some of
Depends
them.
On who you are.
Depends on what district and
depends
how,
on, depends how white,
how
you,
white
are.
You are. Yeah.
Depends.
Don't get too inside baseball with our faith.
I'm about to in a minute, so we got some hashtags coming up. We won't get that inside baseball. Let's talk a little bit about it.
All right.
A little something. Anyways, this week in hashtag. First of all, today is Transgender Visibility, a day of visibility. You can go to hashtag Trans Visibility Day to check out more information about it. I posted a bunch of stuff on my personal public Facebook page. You can check out some statistics about why Trans Visibility Day is necessary. You know, I don't really have much to say about this except for I'm really disgusted with so many cis folks. And also, it hasn't escaped me. You know, I shared a ton of shit today on Facebook because I was on there a lot doing some other stuff. And, you know, I posted at least 3 posts about Trans Visibility Day and they've gotten like no likes whatsoever. I posted 1 post about hiring an executive assistant for me and Marissa, and it got like 1 billion. And look, it's not a shaming thing about like my friends list or any of those things, but it's just so, the silence is deafening when it comes to supporting our trans siblings, and it hurts. Like, it's upsetting to me, and I know that obviously they can feel the silence and the lack of participation and the lack of lifting up and all of those things. So I don't know.
We need to
get our shit together.
You know, you had said to me that you had talked a little bit with me privately about being a little bit, I don't know, like taken aback and disappointed in, and this is a new term to me, the TERF, so trans exclusionary radical feminism. And I have to say, even in my own circle, you know, like my inner circle, family, I was really taken aback at the trans phobia, the othering of trans, you know what I mean? Like, people that I know have a great lens on race and they really get a lot of stuff and they're really, you know, they're friends and family. And I had to tell them, like, listen, that, you know, I have trans individuals in my life that I love and care deeply about. And what you're saying is not appropriate. What you're thinking is, you know, let me correct you on a few things. And that was tough, like with family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have too many people that too many trans people I love too deeply, to not push harder for that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I have to work on my own, and that means, you know, friends and family might start with my inner circle. But I would have thought folks that knew more and cared more and had it with race would have not been so deeply indoctrinated with hetero cis normative.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the other hashtags that I wanted to mention are right fit, wrong color, and UU white supremacy teaching, which are a little bit of inside baseball about our faith, Unitarian Universalism. But I wanted to talk about it because, you know, Christina Rivera, who is an amazing religious professional, religious educator in Virginia, she did not get a job at our association recently. And it went to yet another white male who doesn't even live in the district that they're supposed to be serving. And won't be moving there. And it's just become increasingly impossible to not address the consistent institutional racism and white supremacy that persists in every level of the Unitarian Universalism faith and the association. And a group of amazing organizers within the faith have come together to challenge all of our congregations to take over their program for an entire Sunday, either Sunday, April 30th or May 7th, and host a UU white supremacy teach-in. They are providing resources. Safety Pinbox is doing some supplemental resource support for them, for folks to utilize. And we're talking about they're taking over pulpits, they're taking over the Sunday school classes, they're taking over anything that's happening later in the day. It's a full, hopefully, you know, faith-wide, denomination-wide takeover. So be on the lookout for more stuff coming from that. I just think it's interesting. It's been, you know, I posted today that I wish white UUs understood that while their racism is difficult enough to stomach, their reaction to being called out to it is what wounds black and brown UUs the most.
Yeah, that fragility shit as a response. And even the you know, go all the way to the top, the UUA president in response to this wrote a fucking like sexist missive.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the only way to describe it. Mm-hmm. Like a sexist missive screed.
Yeah.
Like the equivalent of a late night Twitter rant from fucking Kanye and Trump. I mean, well, really,
I've been
like
saying that this faith is a direct microcosm of this country.
And
we have watched
true.
It play out. I said this, I've been saying it for years, because as this country has been working through and having these same issues, so has this faith. Everything, and the thing about it is, you know, this notion that UUs and people that are part of UU communities are like these nice liberal white people, it's a damn lie.
Yeah.
I'm going to just be honest.
Now, nice liberal white people is not, that's not the thing to aspire to, you know?
Aisha wrote this really dope piece about when she first moved to Seattle. She said that if UUism had been made into a place, it would be Seattle.
Yeah, I believe it.
And
too.
She talks about how it's a bunch of well-meaning, liberal, well-educated, and wealthy white people who will donate, you know, millions of dollars to charity and think nothing of completely buying out an entire neighborhood of black people and displacing them.
Yep.
Literally. And so it's been interesting, you know, watching them all go through the motion of being like offended that, look, we've been the nice white people. How dare you have
say
a problem with what we're yeah. doing?
How dare you?
We're the
racist.
Nice ones.
Yeah.
Y'all ain't nice. Y'all are trash. FYI.
Yeah. And I, you know, even the, so like I said, Peter wrote this missive and then the response was obviously swift and kind of quick. And he resigned, you know. And I think that it's great because kind of F that guy. But then at the same token, it's like the institutional response feels like every other bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? Like you have a big business, a Fortune 500 company, and it's like, okay, we've got a big problem. The CEO is just going to go ahead and fall on his sword and say, I'm going to have to leave because I'm a distraction and you can't move forward with me in position, so I'm going to resign. And it's like, for what? You know, like, I guess so far, Christine doesn't have her job back. So far, fucking the dude that made that hiring decision is still there. You know?
Yeah, they're all trash.
And I'm not saying Peter's a great guy, but like, he was, and other individuals were counting him as an individual color, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, at the grand scheme of thing, the denomination's upper level got more whiter and maler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck happened?
Well, I didn't get any more mail. It was already. He's
yeah,
mail,
yeah, you're
so.
Right. You're right. But, yeah, I don't know. The UUA had a letter. You know, they wrote a letter. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to investigate. And I'll see what they do. You know, I'm sure it'll be a bunch of fucking committees, but mm-hmm. we'll see. I think, again, just like, what a fucking, just like, I guess supremacy just knows no reality, like you said. But P Money, Peter Morales, he could have fucking been like the steward of $5 million to Blue, of like significant, a sea of change within our faith. Instead, he's the first ever to resign and like 3 months before his tenure was up.
Well, you know, there's an assumption in your statement that he wanted to do any of this.
No, you're right. I said he could have. That could have assumes he wanted to, but you know, wrong.
I would gather he doesn't. Given his activity
clearly,
and statements.
It's too fucking
you know,
late now anyway.
Actively calling me mean at every chance that he gets, you know, shit like that.
You're aggressive. You know that.
That nigga has seen me be mean. Let me tell you something. When I'm mean, people will know it. You know. I mean, it's very obvious.
I'll say this.
I haven't been mean to Peter Morales once.
Listen. I'm not going to name names. I ain't going to spill tea. But there's a podcaster that crossed paths with you. And does he podcast anymore?
Does he? If you podcast and nobody listens to it, did it happen? I'm not sure.
It was pretty scorched earth. Yeah. I literally, when that started, I was like, oh, my God. You just, oh, Jesus. I'm just going to step out this.
Don't do that.
You loaded a bazooka. She loaded for bear.
Don't do that.
Dumbass.
Don't do that.
A dumbass. Where's my... Of course, now it's not working.
Sorry. I shouldn't laugh at you, but it's funny.
No, I mean, it worked, and then it didn't work, and then it worked when I played it on this other one.
You claim it worked. Oh. Y'all ain't know. I go by the name of Lupe Fiasco.
Lupe Fiasco. First and 15. Yeah. And this one right here. I dedicate this one right here to all my homies out there grinding. You know what I'm saying? Legally and illegally. You know what I'm talking about? So, check it out. First got it when he was 6. Didn't know any tricks. Matter of fact, first time he got on it, he slipped. Landed on his hip and busted his lip. For a week he had to talk with a list like this. Now we can end the story right here. But shorty didn't quit, it was something in the air. Yeah, he said it was something so appealing. He couldn't fight the feeling, something about it. He knew he couldn't doubt it, couldn't understand it. Branded, since the first kickflip he landed. Labeled a misfit, a bandit. Cocoon, cocoon, cocoon. His neighbors couldn't stand it, so he was banished to the park. Started in the morning, one stopped after dark. Yeah, when they said it's getting late in here, so I'm sorry, young man, there's no skating here. And so we kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. And the way he rolls. So we're not trying to give too much to 45 and malignant fucking office, but I wanted to lift up Intellectual Media, which is a product of Lectual, Lectual Gionde. It's actually Lectual _. Mm-hmm. We'll put that in the notes. A Twitter account I absolutely love. Really is doing, I would say, like Twitter essays and writing full time. You can support their work through, I think, Patreon or PayPal. We'll make sure that's included as well. But Lectual has a Trump tracker. So rather than, I think, us have to fuck around and talk about and discuss anything, we can even maybe pick one out here and there if it makes sense. But she's literally put day by day, 8 weeks. I'll read the heading. This is from Lectual. Gorging myself daily on the antics of Donald Trump and his administration over the next 4 years will not be a pleasant task, but I will resist. I will help whoever is reading this resist. Resist what, you ask? The alternative facts. The plain person pronounces this as a lie, and the borrowed fascism that combined are ripening in the Trump administration as I type these very words. Most Wednesdays you can count on a brief ledger of all his malignancy, corruption, incompetency, basically all the things that matter. Red flags abound in the weak administration, and this week was a doozy. And then, like, literally there's like, on just Wednesday, Trump calls a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist David K. Jernison for releasing his tax returns, calls him out. Federal Judge Derek Watson of Hawaii authorizes a temporary restraining order on Trump's revised travel ban. It just goes like down the list. I don't want to read it. We don't need to read it. But if you're looking for a comprehensive Dear Trump and Feuder fuckery, this is highly recommended.
That's where to go.
Yeah, yeah. I like her stuff, and this is great. And speaking of fuckery,
speaking of the
EP, there's just so much. It's like, that's why I didn't want to like even go into it. So like Trump
the
tracker,
like
go to the Trump tracker. It's okay. It's right there. But the dismantling of the EPA, you know, and oh, fucking last night, Mike fucking Pence and the fucking Planned Parenthood, just all the shit. But in the dismantling of the EPA, there was this fucking turn of phrase that Trump used. And he was like, we're now going to reverse this terrible Obama administration and end the theft of prosperity. And I read it like, what? Theft of prosperity? Like, that is some fucking like Orwellian doublespeak if ever there was. So I'm not a prosperity thief. You can call me that on Twitter. And I don't quite know if that's an alternative fact or that's what they told me or whatever this shit is, but theft of prosperity was a new one on me. I hadn't seen that. I feel like you're doing that to me, Leslie. You're stealing my prosperity.
I'm not. You wouldn't have no prosperity if it wasn't for me. I am your prosperity. Write that shit down.
You're stealing my prosperity.
I am your prosperity.
At the Nintendo Switch game.
Link, you have no prosperity without me.
My Link Breath of the Wild prosperity is being limited by you. Legend of Zelda prosperity is down.
You a mess.
Because of you.
You supposed to play Run the World now.
I don't have that queued up, but I can try. You want to wait a second?
I can't play anything, so I would play it, but, you know, people got me out here like some sort of...
Okay. Oh, I bet it's going to be a commercial.
They're way too
ineffective fool out here in these streets.
Commercial. You know what? You could have played it with your iPad. I told you that.
How?
Last time you did it with your iPad.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
I don't remember all that.
Yeah. They can play this commercial for another 5 seconds, and then we'll have Bay. Just the one with like the 10-minute intro of her on the horse.
Got like the longest intro one.
And that's
ever.
What I just said. Yo, this shit's got 354 million views. That's almost half a billion views.
Seriously, they're gonna play like the feminist thing? Is this the live one? I'm confused.
No, she's like under the bridge with the whole squad. Now she fucking getting ready. It's just all intro though.
So intro.
Now they're getting, here we go. That was 54 seconds for the record. Run this mother.
All right. So Miss DC rocked her natural hair after being advised not to in the Miss America pageant. Miss District of Columbia Sierra Jackson in the Miss America pageant was urged to wear anything but her natural hair in this competition. Some thought that straightening her hair would increase her chances of winning the competition, but Jackson had other plans. Instead of falling into mainstream media's perception of beauty, she proudly represented her beauty. Miss DC proudly rocked her natural kinky curly hair and won the swimsuit portion of the competition. An interview with the Ledger Inquirer, Jackson said, I've had so many people tell me that I shouldn't wear my hair naturally curly on stage, but there is a purpose behind that vision, is to show people that you can still be successful, you can still be amazingly talented and still reach all your goals. I think that's a universal message that anyone can grab onto and hold on to in their lives. I've been so blessed that the Miss District of Columbia board has been so open to allow me to express myself in that way and embraced me choosing to present myself in an authentic way. I know that it happened this way because God destined it to be that way. So shout out to her.
Big shout out.
She looks so beautiful in the pageant, and I just think it's dope.
I'm biased because of you, but I think natural hair is just gorgeous. And that's not even shade to people that don't wear natural hair, but I'm just so tired of fucking policing it.
Yeah.
And people
mind your
saying,
business about people's hair. How about that?
And just like, who are you as a person to say that like, this isn't what, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but if you're going to succeed in a pageant, the way to do that would be feeling yourself. At least that's, you're not going to, at least, I don't know me. I wouldn't succeed if I'm not feeling myself. If I'm feeling like, oh, they made me wear this thing. I don't really feel comfortable, but I'm going to wear it anyway. Like, I have to feel good to be on stage. And telling somebody that they're not going to do well if they don't wear hair certain this way or that way, that just like sets them up for failure. That's so shitty.
It is. It's pretty shitty.
It's like, how about like, what would be the way you want to wear your hair? Wear it that way. Can't you do that? Can we not get behind? I don't know. It's so irritating when you see just how often and how consistently whiteness polices blackness.
Yeah, it's a lot. And it's pretty much like all the time, everywhere, constantly.
Speaking of.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey.
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 White people.
Bring it, Cannon.
God damn it.
Fucking white people.
Yeah.
So, NPR did an interesting story entitled Six Words, Black Babies Cost Less to Adopt. And it's a series of conversations about the Race Card Project, where thousands of people have submitted their thoughts on race and cultural identity in six words. Every so often, NPR host, special correspondent, will dip into those six words to explore issues surrounding race and cultural identity for Morning Edition. And so this one was based on a submission that said, Black babies cost less, from somebody named Michelle P. in Covington, L.A. We decided to adopt a child years ago. We're not infertile, but felt like it was a great way to add to our family when loving someone While loving someone who needed us, our research showed us that African-American children, especially boys, are the least adoptable in our country. So we decided to adopt via a nonprofit agency, a child of any race. In the U.S., whether you find a non-for-profit or a for-profit agency, black children are cheaper. I have read the reasoning behind this, but I really don't care to repeat the rationalizations here. My son was cheaper than if he'd been white. How will he feel if he ever finds out about that?
Well, certainly don't start by writing a goddamn letter into NPR. I hope they didn't say her name.
They had her first name, last initial, in her city.
It doesn't surprise me, but what to go follow up? What NPR say?
They just dipped into it, and it is very true. Other contributors said similar things, like navigating world as transracial adopted family and shit like that. It's true. They are cheaper. Literally.
I guess there's not much else to say beyond that.
I mean, there is, and I'll give some statistics if you'd like to have them. African-American babies due any day, $17,000 plus legal fees. And that goes all the way up to a Caucasian baby due in February is $29,000 plus $7,000 in legal fees.
Mm-hmm. Almost double.
Yeah. You can see that, yeah. So it's like $17,000 about for black children, and then biracial or... biracial is the highest, actually, interestingly enough.
So, what the fuck is that? Wow. And maybe that's because of biracial parents.
Yeah, and then and then the specific splits are like African-American and Native American, biracial, Caucasian and Hispanic, Caucasian and African-American. It's crazy.
How much would our baby be worth?
I don't know how much. Not much, because they ain't no baby, so.
I suppose that's true.
Yes. So, anyways, I think it's interesting. Not interesting. I think it's a sad state of,
sad.
You know, why those things are facts. But I think that it's something, I'll say this, it's something that white parents that adopt black and brown children need to be wrestling with, is what it needs to be. I don't need to unpack that shit for them, because I'm not adopting, no.
That's not us.
Transracial baby. Anyways, the other thing I thought that was interesting, and we don't need to play the White Lie song, because
I've got it.
Oh, you do? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. You didn't let me do a thing.
My bad.
Fun, baby.
More intro.
So much intros.
That's Grandmaster Flash.
It's true.
Leslie was off her cue, but that's White Lies.
Yes.
We're not playing a cocaine song.
No. White Lies.
White
history.
Lies.
So this happened. A black Georgetown employee finds out the school sold his great-great-great-grandmother. One Georgetown University recently found out that he was tied to the school by more than a paycheck. Jeremy Alexander, an executive assistant at Georgetown's Office of Technology Commercialization, recently found out that his paternal great-great-great-grandmother, Anna Mahoney Jones, was one of the hundreds of slaves sold by two Jesuit priests at Georgetown to save the school from bankruptcy. Now I work here to realize that this is my history. This is my story. Blows me away. I've been really emotional as I learned about my ties to the university. Although Alexander had his DNA tested in 2014, along with that of his wife and parents, like many African-Americans, his search reached a dead end with the name of his great-grandmother, Anna Jones, the granddaughter of Anna Mahoney Jones. Last fall, however, the 45-year-old father was one heard from a woman from Boston, Melissa Kemp, who turned out to be a distant cousin, Kemp was able to go back two more generations and introduce Alexander to his connection to Georgetown, Anna Mahoney Jones. She told him that Mahoney Jones was among the 272 slaves sold for about $3.3 million in today's dollars to help Georgetown survive. He told her that he actually worked at the university genealogist working with the nonprofit, the Georgetown Memory Project, or trying to reconstruct comprehensive narratives of the 272 men, women, and children and their descendants. They found that Anna Mahoney Jones was born in 1811 and married Arnold Jones in the mid 1820s. Her husband escaped before he could be sold. Mahoney Jones and her two children, ages 6 and 9, were enslaved at the Chatham Plantation in rural Louisiana on the west bank of the Mississippi River. Her name shows up again in the 1870 census as living in New Orleans, where she died 4 years later. Judy Rifle, a genealogist, confirmed through archival records and DNA test results that Alexander was indeed a descendant of Anna Mahoney Jones. So far, about 4,000 of the descendants of the 272, both living and dead, have been identified. The university has promised to give descendants preferential admission status in the school. So you're going to let them pay you to come there? Interesting.
Wow. They sold his great-great-grandfather to stay in alive, to stay afloat.
Yeah. Yeah, and now, they pay him.
Wow. I don't want to say we're running late on time, but let's make it quick. Slow the clock and I guess roll into TVs real quick.
Yeah, let's do it.
So I don't want to talk too much, but there was a TV show called Eden that was meant to be
save that. We can talk about that next show.
All right, cool.
And we can save the next one too. We can save both of those and just talk about these couple things. In fact, all right. Just talk about the March Madness thing.
So, I was watching HBO does these 24/7 is their brand, boxing, Felix Hernandez 24/7 before the fight kind of thing is what they do. So they have all these reality shows, a lot like the inside the NFL that they used to do.
Yeah.
Remember those?
Yeah.
So it's like that, and they're doing one with the UConn women's basketball team and their March to Madness. And UConn women's basketball team is very dominant. They've won I think 8 national championships in the last 11 years. Their current record is 169-1. They've been completely undefeated this year and maybe even the last 2 years in a row, including a national championship last year, heavily favorite for national championship this year. So the documentary crew is following them. And I've been kind of enjoying it. I like the women that are on the show, the young women that are the basketball members, the players.
Yeah.
And, the show you most recently watched, was in particular, a little over the top with the sort of inappropriateness between the male coach Gino Auriemma and the players and some of the other stuff.
I just felt it was just weird watching this old white dude, sit around while all of these women around him did all the work, and then he was in charge of all these young women. It just optically was off to me. Something was strange about it.
Well, in a 30-minute show, you pointed out about 19 things that ruined it for me, so thank you. There's even an article in Teen Vogue about women's basketball coaches and sexism. And in fact, it's not necessarily blaming Title IX, but with Title IX came more programs, and with more programs came more men applying for them. So just like a lot of advancement and advocacy, affirmative action benefits white women more than black folk. So Title IX, not surprisingly, has benefited white male coaches.
Yeah.
Or just male coaches, I should say.
Right.
I shouldn't just say white because it's Title IX. But specifically in 1973, where's the statistic? The numbers don't lie. In 1972, 90% of coaches for women's team were women. By 2012, the figure was only 43%. And in last year's Final Four, all four teams were coached by men. And they had some other figures as to why women aren't coaching men. And basically sexism, and it's interesting that Teen Vogue, I don't know if they've had problems before, if they've got problematic framing, but they report in their report, they talked a little bit about women don't apply for jobs teaching men, and women don't feel they're qualified, so they don't go for it. It's kind of I don't know if that's a weird way of saying it, but okay,
that's strange.
So speaking of ruined shit, Copaganda. Copaganda. I struggled with a lot of shows, and we just stopped watching a bunch of shows. And one of them was Major Crimes, which used to be The Closer, now it's called Major Crimes.
Right.
But fucking A, this most recent episode, they've got a character, Lieutenant Tao, and he's got another, like a rookie type police officer, and they're chasing down a criminal. And the one guy's got his gun out, and the Lieutenant Tao character, like, it was the most absurd. I've never seen anything written like that before. He was like, stand down, don't do that, don't shoot, we don't do that at the LAPD, we don't shoot unless there's the stand down. And I was like, okay, fuck you. I just really was like, click. I just couldn't do it.
Like, that's it.
It was so absurd. It was literally like, we don't do that at the LAPD. Okay, stop. Just click.
Do you don't? Because history, news organizations, and lots of other things would tell me differently. It was terrible.
Yeah. And so speaking of ruined, and this, I say, takes propaganda a step further. And I would, and you and Ryan called it like full-on systems-aganda. But CBS kind of fucking ruined The Amazing Race. And then... like put on a pantheon to capitalist horseshit cops and whatnot. Like, it's really strange. So CBS Amazing Race used to be, two people that knew each other, that were in relationship with each other, brothers, fraternity sisters and brothers, a mom and son, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, fiance, that kind of shit. And now they've got 12, teams made up of 24 random strangers that they put together. And they're telling us, I'm watching this first episode, and the random strangers, like right away, I was like, wait a minute, there's two cops. Here's two military people, you know, like a wounded warrior. I'm not saying these people are bad. I'm not trying to be like, oh, they shouldn't be on the show. But it's like, you just put on a full show that's like nothing but like rah-rah, sis, boom-ba, like Trump supporters. Mm. And I guess you really couldn't have like, you know, like full on like Black Lives Matter activists on the show with random people that include a Trump supporter, you know.
Right.
But it just seemed like, again, like very chosen for a specific purpose to frame a narrative. And I'm not here for that.
No.
Like propaganda about military and capitalism and cops and
all of that.
I don't need to watch that. Thanks.
No, thanks. I'm good. You can keep that mess.
Yep. All right, let's, we gotta get you going, so let's wrap it up.
Yeah, so I think that's it. Any other, like, fun stuff? Well, you had a podcast standing, right?
Yeah, didn't you want a podcast?
I thought you wanted to podcast.
Well, I wanted to talk about Kay coming to Jimmy.
I can't talk about that. It sounds very self, like, congratulatory.
It does? Oh, okay. Well, I'm standing for the Black Guy Who Tips because I love the Black Guy Who Tips. And I'm standing because last week you invited Kay, again, for Black Guy Tips, to come, with you to Jamaica on this awesome, Black Women retreat that's going to be super dope. And I want to say personally here on the air to everyone listening, I'm so happy for you and I'm so proud for you and Marissa that you're doing this. I know in my heart how much and how long you've been talking about a Black woman retreat like this. I know what it means as a culmination for you, and I'm just so happy for you, and I'm thrilled, and I'm glad Karen's getting to come. And I think it's terrific you invited her. They've been super supportive. They've done like fuckloads of commercials, and I just think it's great, and she's gonna love it, and she'll be a great dynamic for you guys there. And I'm really just thrilled that you're getting to do this, because I know it's something you've talked about for a very long time. It's been a dream, and I love seeing your dreams come true.
Thanks, babe. It has been a dream of mine. I'm super excited. You're gonna make me all like emotional or whatever, but anyways, I'm excited about that too.
Y'all finished or y'all done?
Good night, everybody.
High five.